cut out all the crap and go, what is the one thing that we're going to focus on as our signal for success or failure? And then just do that thing.
You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Steli Efti and Heaton Shaw, who insisted on having Steli's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers.
Shut up!
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
Heaton, what are we talking about this week?
So today we're actually going to talk about a topic that was suggested in our Facebook group. If you are not in it, it's thestartupchat.com/FB.
There you go, my man. Out.
That's usually what Steli does. So there was a question and it got 11 likes.
Okay.
And it wasn't a question. It was based on something you posted. So what you posted was about soliciting a topic from people in the group. There's been 8 likes on it and 44 comments. So a lot of comments. But this one got way more likes than anything else. Everything else got like 2 or 3. This one has 11 likes.
Okay.
So I'm going to read. I'm going to first do a shout out to James Lewis, who left the comment. And
James.
And so we're going to talk about what James wanted us to. So here's what James suggested. There's a lot of people talking about how great their startups are doing. There's a lot of people blogging about why their startup failed. So I love the way he started that because he talked about the good
and the bad.
And the bad.
Or
But what about in between? How best to deal with a startup that isn't going so well? You're struggling to reach the next goal. Team morale is slipping and you're wondering how to get everything back on track.
Beautiful. Let's talk about that. I love that because one of my favorite things to say is that yes is good, no is good, maybe is where startups go to die, right? It's the maybe land. It's the some things are working, some things aren't, but there's enough for us to hang our hopes on, but not enough for us to know we're crushing it. That place is a really dangerous place.
How do people get to that place? I think we should talk about that a little bit.
I think that most companies, most startups have to go through that place. Because
it's, so is it like Seth Godin's The Dip, that kind of thing you're talking about?
Maybe.
Just curious what.
Maybe. I don't know if I would use that framework, but what I think is that it's rare that you hit it out of the park in the sense where you only taste success.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's rare that it's such a soul-crushing defeat from the get-go, like that it's you're dead out of the water. You just know within the first week, oh shit, this isn't working.
Right.
Most of the entrepreneurs I know, most startups I know, either from the get-go or very early on, at some point have to go through a phase where some things are working and some aren't. We have some users, but not as much as we want. We have some engagement, but not quite the thing. Like there's something missing and they're like slugging it, hustling it out.
Right.
And they have enough signal to be able to be hopeful and be like, we have something here. We just need to figure it out.
There's some customers, a few of them like it. Not all of them do. There's high churn, whatever.
Yeah, they get some signals that make them go, we should keep doing this.
Yeah.
But not enough that everybody knows they're successful and them as well. So it's that area where you don't know, should we keep going?
Yeah.
You know, or are we actually failing and we're just not realizing it? Like what you can easily say that. And that's also one thing that I hate and love about when people say, oh, you need to be data-driven, track this, track that, is that a lot of times if you track data and everything says yes, that's easy. Everything says no, that's easy. But most of the time, even when you track data, it's not as clear. Crystal clear this is working or it isn't working. So what do you do in that phase? I think that's a problem or a struggle that most startups will have to face. How do you deal with that? That's a beautiful question. I think it's a really important one to discuss.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you said data. So I'm going to start there.
Yeah, let's start there.
I hear people ask me about data all the time for some reason. And
it's not for some reason. You started a company called Gizmetrics.
A couple of
data companies.
But I like that you talked about data. I think that the problem that I see with data, let's start there, is that if people think they're, you know, in that situation where the data isn't helping them do anything, it's likely because one of two reasons. They don't have enough, right? Like sometimes you need a volume of data. I could argue one way or another about that, though. But the biggest problem I've seen is that they just don't look at the data the right way. So they're looking at it as an average, right? But they might have got like 50 people using their product and they're like, oh, on average, nobody does anything. Okay. So then I would ask them, well, like, what do you want them to do? Can we define that? And can we just find people that did that?
Yeah.
Let's not focus on the people that didn't do it.
Yeah.
Let's go focus on the people that did. So for me, there's actually a simple system around if you actually, let's say you're in a position where you actually have customers. even if it's 10 or 20 or 50, whatever, right? If you don't have customers, we have an episode for you.
Yeah.
Right? That's about how to get your first customers.
Yes.
So you go over there. Yeah. Don't even listen to the rest of this. Yeah. Go find that episode.
Yes.
It's 20-something probably. So I think it's pretty binary. The way I treat it is if I have data, which is really I have usage, so I have customers using it, as long as it's more than, let's say, around a dozen,
mm-hmm.
right? I'll just go find people that are doing the things that they should be doing on the product, like that I want them to do, that I intended them to do,
yeah.
even if it's like one or two of them. And I'd go find out everything I can about them. Why do they like it? Are they special? Are they different? Whatever. And one of two things will happen. One, you'll be like, oh, there's a lot more people like that in the world. I just have to figure out how to get more people to that place or find more people like that. One or the other. Or they're very special. They're very unique. And our product just happened to be there at the right time or something like that. So they're using it, but we can't go get more people using it like that.
Right.
Maybe they're using it in an unintended way. Maybe there's only a few people. It's a niche, whatever. So for me, it actually does start with the data, but it really starts with the customer.
Yeah.
And then being binary. There's people that love it, right? And there's people that don't care about it. And for the people that love it, they're likely using it a lot. Go find out everything about them. For the people that don't, those are that whatever you can do with them is also gold. Find out why they didn't do the thing that got the other people to the place they did, right? That's simple if you have customers and you have data.
Yeah.
Right. And you can just split it up like that.
So there's actually something else I want to get to, but yeah. as a sidestep, because it was one of the most kind of profound things that I've learned from you, even before we met in person.
Sure.
And that has to do with like the very early stages was, I think a talk that you gave at MicroConf,
yeah.
the year before we spoke yeah. both at the conference, where you were talking about the kind of, lean startup and customer yeah. development and saying that as entrepreneurs, you should try to disprove your hypothesis,
right.
not prove it, right?
That's right.
And yeah. I was like, mind blown.
Yeah.
Just blown. Yeah. I was like, holy shit.
That's funny because it's a core lean startup principle. You're not creating a hypothesis and then going trying to validate it. You're trying to actually figure out that it, you know, whether it's true,
yes,
which means invalidated.
But most people miss that, me included.
Yeah, agreed.
I've told many yeah. people that technique, yeah. and they always like, oh my God, I've never thought about it that way. I'm like, yes, it's all me, not me. No, but the that's a beautiful thing, and it will play a role in the, hey, we have a startup, we have a team, we have a product, yeah. we have something going on, but it's not, yeah. we're not crushing it. What do we do in this space is the... You know, when you're trying to disprove your hypothesis,
yeah.
it's a different perspective, especially because as an entrepreneur, yeah. you're overly optimistic.
Yeah.
You're overly looking
yeah.
to see the world the way you want it to be.
Yeah.
So because of those traits, people go and they tell two people about their idea and the two people go, oh, cool idea. And they're yeah. like, I validated the idea. Everybody loves it, right?
Yeah. Someone saying it's a cool idea doesn't mean shit.
Yes. Now, let's take a few steps into the yeah. company is already launched. The,
yeah.
the business is there. There's a product. There's something. There's a team, right?
Yeah.
And you're not crushing it. Like, it's not obvious that you're like making all the right decisions, moving
yeah.
and progressing the right way, but you're also not dead in the water in the sense where everybody realizes we just killed the company. This
yeah.
doesn't work.
Yeah, where it's an obvious lose.
Yes, where it's an obvious lose or fail.
Yeah.
So you're in that in-between zone, right?
Yeah.
Where some things work and some things don't. How do you evaluate what's going on in your company? How
yeah.
do you evaluate, how do you look at the progress versus the things that aren't going well? And how do you weight, how do you scale and weight these things to
right.
know how to interpret them?
I mean, first, I think you have to take your ego out of it and even take your ideas around this business sort of out of it,
yeah.
almost as if you don't know anything.
Yeah.
So I think you have to first have a mindset like that. So if someone came to me and they're in this in between, they don't know what to do, I try to get them in the mindset of, well, you know, we all don't know what to do.
Mm.
If you think you know what to do, you're probably going to be wrong anyways. So let's not assume we know what to do. And instead, let's go figure out everything we can about how people are using the product, how they're not using the product, why they signed up for it, and all that kind of stuff, right? And once you sort of can have an evaluation that's sort of unbiased, I think everything, a lot of things open up. So the thing I would suggest would be how can we evaluate this business? Because the main thing I've seen, especially with startups, is like, they don't realize they're just building a business. You're just building a business. People have been building businesses forever, right? There's lemonade stands when you were a kid or newspaper routes. Those are all businesses, right? So to me, I think the fundamentals of a business is that someone has to pay you, right? Especially for most of our audience, I'm assuming
yes.
they're probably working on things that people will pay for.
Yes.
Right? Because we probably have a self-funded, skewed crowd.
Not lots of people trying to build like...
Yeah. So if that's the case, then you're actually getting customers. So the biggest signal you have is someone pulled out their credit card and paid you, So go find, if there are people that have done that, go talk to them and figure out why the hell they paid you. What's even more awesome is if there are people that stop paying you, you should go spend time with them too. In fact, try to, and this is very tactical, but try to have roadblocks to them canceling. Make it so they actually have to call you. Say, hey, we'll cancel you right away. You just got to call this number. And then you get to talk to them before they're even allowed to cancel.
Right.
So early on in a product, I like doing things like that because you don't have a lot of quantitative data. You literally don't, not if you have 50 users or 10 users or whatever.
So
yeah,
I love that. And I want to piggyback on that a little bit and add a few other things. I think that so there's one philosophical and one tactical piece. The philosophical one is that one reason, and we talked about this, like what do you do when you have you launch a product or you work on a product for a year and then you launch it and you have like no users, no customers.
Please don't work on it for a year.
Yes. But you know, one of the key things we uncovered there was that it doesn't matter if you worked on something for a year or a decade, the moment you go out there and you try to get customers is day one of that company.
That's right.
Right? So you need to kind of let go of everything that happened before and not be attached to it. And I think that same thing applies with a company that has a team, a product, maybe some investors, maybe whatever, some customers. Things are not quite rocking and rolling. One part that creates, I think, tension that's destructive to finding the right solutions and finding the way to make this business really work is that you are attached to everything that you have. You're attached to the people, to the ideas, to the progress, to the customers.
So we're still philosophical, right?
That's the philosophical one.
So to me, you're getting into, I guess, religion in a way. And I'll tell you why in a second, right? My religion, Jainism, is all about non-attachment.
There you go.
And I know you've been studying Buddhism,
yes,
which is actually Jainism and Buddhism are very related.
Yeah.
So I naturally am not attached to anything. Like this is just my personality, partly upbringing, religion, whatever, and partly just, I don't know.
Character.
I felt like it's been better not to be attached to
yes.
this. Except maybe my kids, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably the only thing I'm attached to be honest. But
save me here.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Oh, they get you good. Outside of that, so what I really like about that is, and just staying for philosophy for a second, because I know then we'll get really tactical, but is how do you develop that sense of sort of detachment?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, can you just objectively look at your business? Is there somebody you trust that can objectively look at it with information that you give them? And trust is just like, not even trust, you value their opinion.
Yes.
Could be father, mother, grandmother, grandfather, whatever, right? Anybody who can think just about business very logically with you, right? Even someone good at math would work, right?
Yeah.
And then just, they'll probably have a more objective view because they're detached anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tell them things like, hey, I need your viewpoint, that's very brutal and honest and detached from me or what I'm doing because I'm attached to it, right? So if you're having a hard time with this, go find someone that can give you the detached view, and that might already put light bulbs start going off because you're like, oh, I was so close to it, I couldn't see what's reality.
What's in front of me. Yeah, that's a beautiful tactic. I think additionally to that is I think a lot of times when some things are going well and some things aren't, what you're probably doing is you're looking for too many things as signals for how things are going. So I would go back to simplifying it and looking at less data if you want so.
Sure.
So you're not saying, well, we have this great business partnerships going on. We had all this press.
Right. But all that's motion anyways. That's not progress.
Yeah. We have, you know, there's signals. We have all these new companies in the pipeline since we launched this big new marketing campaign. And we think they're enterprise type prospects. Yeah. So probably in the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to close them. But until then, we need to, there's all these things that you're looking for as kind of signals for hope or for you're doing well. And that's the problem. You're like, you're so polluted in the amount of things that you're doing and the busyness that you're creating that you're then creating false signals, right?
I love that because I actually have a line for that. So if someone comes into a call or a meeting with me and starts going off on those things, I'm like, fuck all that. I literally will stop and be like, wait, fuck all that.
Can we stop the podcast for a second and highlight that, that I've been a tremendous positive influence on you. And you have been a horrible influence on me. There's literally somebody on our Facebook group. So again, go to thestartupchat.com/FB for Facebook and join our Facebook group. Almost 700 people are going to cross the 1,000 pretty soon at
this rate. Yeah.
Amazing conversation going on. And somebody took a soundbite where you're like, fuck this, fuck that, show me customers. It's like best soundbite of the podcast.
Right, yeah.
And it was not me saying that.
That's right.
It was Heaton. So I just wanted to take a moment to highlight that.
There was a time when I was worse than you when I was in meetings. I just got to say that, but I've just gotten better, and now you're making me worse.
No, no, publicly.
This is not public. Who the hell's listening? Just a few thousand people, right? Nobody's listening. There you go. Yeah.
All right, so coming back to the line, fuck all that, right? Show me the customer. Show me the
yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I do. Let's talk about your customers. Let's not talk about these partnerships. Let's talk about your customers.
Find one key metric. Even if you have a consumer app and you don't have customers, right? Yeah. Find one key metric. What's the most important one, which is the Paul Graham tactic we discussed. The thing he literally made us shake hands on the first office hour at Y Combinator was, what's the most important metric for success? And all I want you guys to do in the next 3 months is increase that number by 10% every single week.
Right? That's make it very unambiguous if we're having progress or not, if we're doing well or not, right?
Yeah. There's one single number that's leading the way. And I think too many startups are looking at too many things. And then they're like, well, we're really shitty on the customer side, but we have this big partnership with whatever, you know, with Apple that could change our life. And they have all these things that they place their hopes on. And I think that one way of simplifying your decision making and also improving your chances for success is to cut out all the crap and go, what is the one thing that we're going to focus on as our signal for success or failure? And then just do that thing or just focus on that thing. Yep. And if that number is going up, was going in the right direction, you're succeeding. And if it's not, you're not failing.
Yeah.
And then it's much easier to not be in that in-between, we don't know how it's land, which is the place where companies and careers and people go to die.
Ideally, the metric you pick is customers.
Yeah.
Like new paying customers. And if you grew that 10% every week, that's great.
You know, in our case, at Closeout, we're even more attached to profits as a signal for like customers. So what we look at is like net our revenue growth versus just new customers, right?
Yeah. Is it just MRR growth?
Net MRR. So we'll take out the churn and everything else that's going on, and that's going to be that's the number that we're looking at every single week.
Yeah.
So
you're looking at MRR on a weekly basis.
Yes, on a daily basis, but
the monitoring
growth is on a weekly basis. Yeah.
So that's something people should hear, because I think most people look at it on a monthly basis, not a weekly basis.
Oh no! Yeah. Oh, I would definitely look at it.
Like, how much should we add? How much did we lose that week? Etc. Right?
Oh yeah! Absolutely! Yep. Absolutely! Cool. And like now we're a big business. So these numbers, the daily or the weekly number might not be as significant, but we still look at it that way. Yeah. But in the early days when you're like at, no revenue, how would you look at this on a monthly basis? Right. Like you need to look at it. Yeah, it's way too long.
You probably need to look at it daily.
You need to look at it daily.
How much should we add today?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So another quick example that I want to share with you and see what you will say. I had a meeting with an entrepreneur yesterday. The guy raised some money from wealthy people, but not really tech investors. So there's some
friends
bad things happen. Not really like wealthy people style. Like wealthy people that
but
don't
not
know tech.
Professional investors.
Not tech investors, right? Yeah. So got some money from them.
Yeah.
They launched, have some progress in terms of their volume of traffic and everything, but they're not converting enough in terms of revenue. Now these investors want revenue before they put in more money. And then he moved to Silicon Valley to raise money from Silicon Valley investors here. Yeah. Problem is, company is based in South America. It's a Spanish-speaking site. Yeah. There's lots of promise, but just the people here don't get it.
Yeah.
And he's firing off all the wrong signals. He's hitting all the wrong notes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Spanish-speaking team, somewhere in South America, raised money from some like Texas wealthy people. Just like all the wrong notes.
Yeah.
So can't raise money here. So now he tells me, what to do next. Should he keep like working on this and hustling or let it go and do something else?
Is that a B2B business? Kind of not.
That's it's like an education.
Does it make money?
It makes money.
Okay, that's all I want to know.
Yeah, it makes money. It makes revenue. Yeah. Small revenue,
that's
but
fine.
It makes
it
revenue.
It makes money.
It's like a site that has lots of traffic and lots of users, but then makes sells some portion, some sold parts of what they do.
So,
right?
So, I mean, to me, the first question I ask there is, when do you run out of money? When someone tells me they raise money, my first question, when do you run out of money?
When somebody
tells me they're self-funded, my first question, when do you run out of money? So when do you run out of being able to work on this? That might not be money.
That would be a great question. Yeah. In this case, that doesn't work, which is also a beautiful case for this in-between thing.
Yeah.
Because the guy has marketable skills and his burn is not that high. So what he's doing is he's doing consulting and a bunch of other things and just self-funding it right now.
But he already raised money.
He had already raised money.
Okay.
That money's gone.
That's fine.
Right. But the problem is that if we just say, if I ask him in specific, when do you run out of money, the answer is never, as long as he keeps the team so small.
But I would ask him how. And then when I heard how, I'd be like, well, you have investors. You essentially already ran out of money.
Yeah.
And so I think, honestly, I think he needs to think about whether he should continue the business or not.
Yeah.
Because he got investors. They own equity in his company. And yet he's willing to do all these things to keep the company alive. Is it really worth it?
Yeah.
Right. If it was self-funded, then I would say something different and say, well, it's all your company. It's your choice. If this is how you want to continue it, great. Right. But like once it's funded, I would say that like it was someone else's money you spent.
Yeah.
So now it's almost like bad money. And then now you're going to spend more bad money more of money, your own money on the same idea.
Yeah, yeah.
These people that are not invested in it anymore because you ran out of money still have equity. Do you want to continue like that?
Yes.
Right?
So that's
specific to the situation.
That's a very good point. I give it a tip. Our discussion moved on a slightly different path that I think is relevant for the, like, what do I do in between crops? So I knew when he sat down that he took the meeting to hear from me to keep going.
Yeah.
Right? He chose me, I think, wisely because he wanted me to say keep going because he wants to keep going. He's like, he's that type of guy. I understand that. Right? So... The site that he has, one thing is that it's very much based on SEO. Yeah. So the thing is just growing every single month organically. But his core skill, the reason why they built that site in that niche is that they're really good at SEO.
Okay.
So what we ended the conversation with was saying, all right, so stop fundraising. Like you're just wasting your life right now.
Yeah.
And then if you can't let go of that idea because you really think that if you just keep on it, it's going to be big. Self-funded, but on a very, very small scale. Just don't invest any more money or any big money in it.
Yeah.
Just maintain it, see if it's organically keeps growing.
Yeah.
And then take that skill that you have, that's the core value here. It's not the thing, the niche, it's the skill.
Yeah.
And start a new business.
Sure.
And apply it to something else.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're starting fresh, not with all the baggage, all the old investors, all the old stuff.
Yeah.
And also, because this guy's like fast, fast, fast. He just wants like a big thing. And he was telling me the reason why he wants to raise money here is because he wants to push this to $1 billion and blah, blah, blah. Make this really huge.
Yeah.
So it's like, so since you can't do the overnight, let's make this massive, because you put yourself in a position of failure with that old startup. Bootstrap that and take a really long-term view in the next 4, 5, 6 years, see what happens with it. And then take all that energy, that enthusiasm that I need to rule the world and start something fresh where you don't have that baggage that's going to drag you down.
You're basically telling them to stop the other thing in essence.
Yes.
Just in your own way.
Without having to kill it. Yes.
For sure.
And also like with him, he is not the type of person or not at a point in his life where he is going to go, oh, I'm going to go slow and steady and build this thing over the very long term and I'm going to swallow the bitter pill of having all these investors that are worthless and all that. But also not, I don't want to give this up and start something new because then I would feel like a failure. So this is a in-between solution that gets him going.
I think I'm making you nicer.
Yes.
I don't think you would have said that like...
No.
I don't think it's a good thing, to be honest.
No. Yes, I agree.
I wouldn't have gave him that advice. I would have told him to fucking stop.
But that's because I'm a good influence on you. Like, and you are a bad influence on me. Like, that's the crazy
thing. You gotta stop being nice, dude.
I'm sure everybody that's listening to us thinks, oh, if Heaton could only stop hanging out with Stelly that curses so much. And then look at you, and look at me. I'm getting worse and worse every day. We've established this a few weeks ago that I started giving the carrots out and you brought out the stick now.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see how this will continue to evolve during our relationship. Right. So coming back to the point,
that guy should have fucking stopped.
Yeah.
Right? Or decide how to make that a big business with whatever skills he has. You're giving him the compromise. You're actually letting him have the out. So I'd actually say, no offense, that's bad advice.
I disagree. And I'll tell you
that's
why.
Cool.
Because the advice I gave him will make him start a new thing.
Okay.
Versus if I told him, like that particular person, if I told him, kill that thing and do something else, he would have gone, I will even prove Stelly wrong in this. Like he just has that energy and attitude.
Okay.
So he came to me because he wanted encouragement, but he would have also taken discouragement as encouragement. Like he's just that type of hard-headed person.
Yeah.
So what I gave him is something that allows him. So
how does he do that for himself? Because there might be people that are listening that are in the same boat. They're not going to talk to me. If they talk to me, they'll be motivated to continue, I guess. If they talk to you in this scenario, they would be motivated to start something new and continue the other thing.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
But like, how do you do that for yourself? Because like, people have to do this for themselves. They can't just go
look for advisors or mentors
or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Whoever.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's a good question.
In that spot, because that's probably a common spot. Not necessarily the investors and all, but it's this idea that like things kind of working, but it's not really working.
Not enough.
And there's this one thing we're really good at.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an important question. I think that.
I mean, did you identify if he could make more money on that thing?
We struggled with that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
In the sense, our struggle was not that we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Our struggle was that I couldn't get him to engage in that conversation as much as I wanted him to.
So how do you make that business work better? He was already at the point where he didn't want to do that.
He was at the point where he has a formula, right? Where you spend lots of money, you make little money, and it takes a long time to recoup.
Okay.
And he just wanted a lot more money because he knew to feed that funnel versus I was going, well, wait, we have all this traffic, we have all these, why are we not change the formula?
Let's change the business model. Yeah.
And we went back and forth and back and forth, and then I let that go.
So that probably goes to the earlier point of attachment.
Yes.
He's probably attached to something of the exact way he wants it to work.
Yes.
And so the things he could have done. So I understand your solution, right?
Yeah.
You met with him, so it's still bad advice, but whatever. Just kidding. It's probably good advice.
It's your advice. I'm just giving the internal Heaton advice to people.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome.
What I was saying is like, it feels like he has options.
Yes.
Right? He could have changed the business model there and went at it and tried.
I think so,
right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's just like, hey, go write down what you think the options are, even if you don't want to do them.
Yeah.
And then go show somebody. Like, hey, I got a business. Here's the information about it. Here's the options going forward. What do I do?
All right. Quick switch.
Yeah.
How do you cultivate an attitude of having strong opinions but holding them loosely? Because I think that's what we're – like, I'm feeling like – and I tell this to people all the time that's the type of person I'm looking forward to hire for our business because that's the type of team that we're building.
Yeah.
And I was thinking in this example, or maybe many examples, of people having strong opinions, which they need to have if they're entrepreneurs.
One question. You can probably answer it right now too. But this is a question I'd ask them.
Yeah.
Just one question. When have you changed your mind? Tell me a story about when you changed your mind.
Mm.
That's it. Even me, I'd have a hard time coming up the story, but when I did, then once I found one, I'd go off and find many.
Many.
But the first one's hard to find.
Yeah.
So I think the trick is like keep poking at that angle until you figure out whether there's somebody who can actually change their mind and recognizes when they've done it. Sometimes it's just a click.
So then, for people that want to have this explained a little bit, what I mean by strong opinions hold loosely is that you're the type of person that has a point of view, has an opinion, speaks up. Right? And then we'll fight or defend that opinion to a certain degree, but is not attached to it.
Yeah.
So you have the ability to just let it go if it's not productive to keep holding on to that opinion, either because the world is proving you wrong or because you can convince the room of your opinion.
Yeah.
You're just like going to say, I think this is stupid for a reason X, Y, Z. You have an argument back and forth and eventually you go, all right, fuck it. Let's just go with your opinion and move on. And you really mean it. You have like zero emotions about it.
I think there's a good way. Good way to strongly hold an opinion. I'm sorry, not strongly. There's a good way to have a strong opinion. And there's a bad way to have a strong opinion.
Right.
So I hear a lot of people thinking they have a strong opinion when all it is it's not backed by anything. So I can break it apart really fast. And it's not because I'm special. It's just because there's no logic to it. Right. They can't support it. So I think that's an opinion that's completely irrational and has no evidence. Right. And I'm not saying you need perfect evidence or perfect information. But like if someone says like, you know, I'm going to sell this product online without a sales team, right? That's actually one that I had to change my mind on over time, not even recently, but years ago.
Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't be sitting here today if I had an opinion of hating sales. I actually don't hate it anymore. I used to hate it though. So if you ask me that question, I'd tell you at one point I hated inside sales and enterprise sales just because I saw what that world looked like by having to do it at my consulting company. I didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And then I realized that there's certain businesses where if you don't do it, you fail.
Yeah.
Because people want to be sold.
Yep.
Like people want to buy through inside sales. They want to talk to people. They want demos. Salespeople aren't bad, right? So that's actually a time when I've changed my opinion on something. But the reason I was able to do that is because I was able to take an objective view and say, wait, all these things that I'm trying, all these things that I'm doing that are against that are actually not going to make me successful. So you could think about like, is what I'm doing today, is the way I'm thinking about it a way for me to get success? And even when you think about it in an interview, right? I think you can figure out whether someone's a rational person and can actually change their mind just by the way they describe how they change their mind, right? So the way I changed my mind is I kept going on the path of the strong opinion. No one could shake it, even salespeople and all that. And then as I started studying the industry, this is specifically analytics, I realized that like what I thought was a good way to sell it is actually a bad way to sell it because of the product we built, the industry we're in, et cetera. And so facts changed my opinion.
So this is a beautiful thing because in YC, when you fill out the application, you know, you fill out all these dates and facts and all that. And then one core question that they ask a lot when you go into the interview, when you get selected to be interviewed as a startup, is they ask, hey, since you launched until then, or since you filled out the application to today, what surprising thing has happened? What was something that you didn't see coming? What's different? And that might be a good question to ask if you feel like you're in that like middle land where things are not quite good or bad and you don't know how things are going.
So like in the last month, what surprised you?
What surprised you?
And what's been different? Is the point that if nothing did, then you're not learning? Or what's is that the point they're trying to get to? Or?
Yeah, I think the point they're trying to get to is that if you are really progressing in the real world, there's going to be things that are surprising or different from your hypothesis or your assumptions. And if they aren't, that's weird, right? That's typically a bad sign. If you're like, I knew this would be the right solution. I launched 3 months ago and everything I thought was right. Then I want to see the chart that's like a million users or makes
revenue. Validates what you just said.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then when I look at the chart and it's like you have 802 users for your like a social networking app, then I'm like, all right, this is a dangerous signal, right? Yeah. There's somebody who launched who thinks he was right with everything and there's not a massive success here.
No.
So there's a problem. This person is not learning enough, right?
There's something they're missing.
There's missing. Obviously. So that's a question you can ask yourself, hey, in the last 3-6 months, what was surprising that we learned? What have we done with these learnings, right? How have we changed?
And if you don't have enough of them, you're not changing fast enough.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then this is going to be my tip, I think, for the episode.
Well, we're almost done.
I was wondering what the timing is. Anyways.
I don't know, but this is it.
it feels like we're a little long on this one. But if you're in that middle stage, right, where you're like, there's enough to keep us going, but not enough to know that we're on the right track. What I want you to do is I want you to do, like, just attitude-wise,